We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Three, two, one. Zero, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal Friday Orbit Show. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in Chicago, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I am ready for an intergalactic ride of a lifetime on this UFO episode, Ty. That's how I am.
We have decided on the U portion. So
yes,
it's the UFO show. We do it every Friday. We're a college football show, but we take on a weird kind of space quasi theme on these Friday episodes. Ultra Megastar Friday Orbit is what we're, I think, going with today, right?
Somehow an even more mega, more ultra star than Eastern PA's Ty Hildenbrandt is appearing. I mean, you were just recognized in a Wegmans.
It's true.
To be fair.
It is true.
But we have somehow booked a star bigger than you. We've been trying to do this forever, and the stars align, Ty, space term.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we are, as you know, because you've seen the episode title, we are incredibly thrilled and honored to welcome in Angels in the Outfield's own Matthew McConaughey.
Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah.
Dallas Buyers
That's a real
Club.
Credit.
Magic Mike, A Time to Kill, Interstellar. The
yep.
list goes on and on. Matthew McConaughey has been in a bunch of cool movies, and he's obviously the minister of culture down there at the University of Texas. Huge Longhorns fan. We are so very thrilled to have him on the program. Been trying to do so for, gosh, I went back years, looked through my email trying to get him on. So finally worked out. As he said, the stars aligned. He's going to be on a little bit. We got a bunch of cool stuff to talk about with him, including his new memoir, which we'll link
yeah.
up in the show notes, called Green Lights. I did have the good fortune to read it. It's really good. Really good.
A ton of crazy stories, worth a read, and we're crazy excited to have him on.
Before we go any further, we also want to talk about what we are doing on Halloween, Dan. Give me a spooky laugh if you've got one of those. Thank you.
It's that might have been a little Santa. I apologize.
There was a little bit of Santa at the end. It's okay.
Yeah.
We're doing what we're calling the Solid Verbal Live Scream at 7 p.m. Eastern on Halloween Saturday night, shortly before
yes.
the Penn State-Ohio State game. We'll be doing it for our Patreon subscribers. We'll be on Discord answering questions as we're doing our live stream. We're obviously going to talk about whatever transpires during the day games, also previewing the night games, the most notable of which is, of course, Ohio State, Penn State. We are working on maybe trying to bring some special friends in as part of that. Don't know if we'll be able to make that happen or not, but there's potential.
I mean, we're bringing McConaughey to the fold. I mean, how much can we do
well,
in a week?
Well, not on Saturday night, but...
I know. But just to the verballers out there, I hear you.
This is for the $5 a month tier. So the lowest tier. If you go on out to verballers.com, if you become a certified $5 per month verballer...
Or a premium, Ty. It's not only certified. Yeah, it's any verballer, for sure.
You can get access to the Halloween live stream... And you get access to any future live streams that we do in the future, depending on how this goes.
I like anchoring these two holidays because we've got a great full calendar year of holidays to do these. But especially during the football season, Ty, it allows us to dress up. It allows us to have a theme about the live. I mean, this one is a live stream, but the streams in general, I couldn't be more excited. And the reason I'm excited is because the people who have signed up on Patreon, these certified and premium verballers, and potentially a benefactor verballer if everything works out, we are going to be bringing emotion that we don't normally bring on Sunday mornings when we record the recap because we don't have time to put things in perspective. We're just going raw off of what we've seen and what we want to see. So what we've seen during the day, what we want to see at night, and we are incredibly excited to do it with what I would consider to be the best college football fans in the world, our Patreon subscribers. It's not unfair to say. So please consider joining us, verballers.com. We have a lot of excitement in going into this live stream on Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern.
I am drinking out of my solid verbal pint glass at the moment.
In
preparation for the Brew and A, which we're going to do after.
Committed to the brand, Ty. I like it.
Committed to the brand. Okay, check that out. We will be talking with Mr. McConaughey shortly. Before we get there, though, I can't yell today. My voice is just toast after a long
week.
Can
you give me an aggressive, like McConaughey-esque whisper, like an intense whisper about the breaking news?
Breaking news. Three things to discuss here, Dan.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, Nebraska. It's off. They're not playing. We previewed it, talked a lot about it. I think we both went Nebraska, given uncertainty. You may recall the line was up there around 8.5 when it opened. Then news broke about Graham Mertz, Chase Wolf, and Danny Vandenboom potentially being the starting quarterback due to COVID. And now it looks like that game is off, which is a bummer. Nebraska actually tried to schedule a game with Chattanooga to just find a replacement. They put a deal together that was nixed by the Big Ten. So it does not look like Nebraska is going to be playing this weekend either, despite their best efforts.
Right. And Nebraska had even offered to pay for and help everything with testing for the mocks. And I think everybody sort of looked at it as a long shot. Obviously, Nebraska, when things were up in the air with the Big Ten, had sort of floated, or at least Scott Frost had floated. We'll play anyone, anywhere, like a Pat Hill type enthusiasm. And that obviously didn't happen. And this is obviously not happening. So Nebraska, with an unexpected bye week, Wisconsin has shut down all team activities. And I did see Barry Alvarez responded to a recent report about the heart screening for myocarditis with COVID positive tests, and how doctors and, you know, everybody's learning everything at once, essentially. But doctors are saying, you know, we're finding so little in terms of myocarditis, and we don't even know if what we are finding is due to COVID or it's due to an undetected birth situation, cardiovascular situation. And so Barry Alvarez was very quick to say, you know, we should look into this, because part of that 21-day Big Ten sit-out policy after a couple positive tests is related to full screening and giving everybody full time to fully understand, I guess, to whatever ability, what is going on with that positive test and how it's affecting an athlete's body. So we'll see. I mean, everything in 2020 is fluid, so worth paying attention to. And good news, for sure, about myocarditis not appearing in positive COVID tests. I take all that as a positive thing, because I don't like when people have a heart situation that to deal with.
No, for sure. To your point about everything in 2020 being fluid, news broke also that Quinn Ewers, the number one overall recruit in the 2022 class, a quarterback out of Texas, he had previously been committed to the University of Texas. He has since decommitted. going to open up his recruitment again, consider his options. He's being recruited by places like Ohio State, like Alabama. Obviously, he's the number one kid. So he has his pick of the proverbial litter when it comes to where he's going next. But a bit of a bummer for Texas. You know, we're going to talk with Mr. McConaughey briefly about the culture at Texas and is it back? What does back mean to get talent like this in state? I think all kind of plays into that. And it's a bummer to hear this.
Yeah, and obviously when Texas most certainly was not back, it was when they struggled at quarterback with both injuries and with talent. You know, the Garrett Gilbert, David Ash, Case McCoy was not an amazing stretch for Texas football. But even if Quinn Ewers decides to recommit to Texas, if that's what's in his plans, there's still a lot of questions about what Texas is looking like moving forward. And Ohio State and Alabama each have a quarterback of the future that they signed last year, which they're going to sign most years. C.J. Stroud at Ohio State and Bryce. I always want to say Bryce Young. Is it Bryce Young?
Bryce Young.
Bryce Young. Okay. There's so many. Bryce is such a good name. That, you know, Quinn Ewers is apparently a 5-star quarterback, 6-star mullet, by the way.
Oh, it's really good.
I don't
good.
Know if you had a chance
it's really
to
good.
Investigate and inspect, but yeah. So, yeah, worth paying attention to because quarterback dominoes seem to be falling sooner and sooner each recruiting cycle, affecting where everybody else is going to end up. So whatever he decides is certainly going to end up affecting the... So this is not this year's coming class, but next year's.
The final bit of news also pertaining to quarterbacks that I have here is that we talked about Miles Brennan practicing, potentially being ready for that Auburn game this weekend. Does not look like that is going to be the case. He's still working on an injury that he picked up, I guess, more than 2 weeks ago now, which means TJ Finley, a freshman, he's going to get his second consecutive start. Finley was formerly a 4-star prospect, threw for 265, 2 touchdowns. Last Saturday?
Had a really nice debut. Yeah, pretty raw, I would say. But in terms of the physical tools and ability to get the ball to more developed players, running backs and receivers and tight ends, seems to be more than serviceable.
Yeah, I mean, looked raw, but also had a confidence about him that I think LSU fans could feel good about. So we'll see how he fares against the Auburn Tigers. But perhaps if that's a game you had circled for this coming weekend, your plans are going to look a little different.
Yeah, also saw the 5, I guess, antigen tests. Maybe you can speak to what that exactly is. I don't know. The antigen tests that came back positive for Oregon players were deemed to be a false positive upon the further, is it PCR test, Ty? That's the more
PCR.
Precise one?
Correct.
Yeah, the PCR one. So that's good news for Oregon football and players that they don't have players quarantining. They don't have players potentially symptomatic, and they're moving forward.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Shall we do it, Dan?
I cannot wait.
Joining us now, it's a gentleman we've wanted to have on the show for quite some time. He needs no introduction. It is the one and only Matthew McConaughey. Sir, welcome to the Solid Verbal. How are you?
Dan, Ty, I'm doing relatively pretty well. How are y'all doing? Thanks for having me.
Fantastic.
We are doing well. So we're obviously going to talk some football with you.
Sure.
But before we get there, congratulations on the book, Green Lights. I see the hat. I like the hat.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. It's this is the truest permanent extension of me I've ever put out. And I'm happy to hear how it's translating out there and being received in the world. I'm honored with it. And I'm happy to say that. That was no guarantee.
It's been out for what, about a week now? I had the good fortune to read it this past week and I couldn't put the thing down, man. It's a hell of a story. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you much, man.
So in the opening chapter of the book, it is your mother brandishing a knife at your father, which is a hell of a way to grab an audience's attention. There are a lot of personal stories in this book, which it's a risky move, frankly, not just because you're showing a lot of vulnerability, but because personal stories don't always land with other people the way they might with you. That was not the case here, at least not for me. Is that something that you considered when putting this together?
Yeah, I did consider it. Look, I went away to write, you know, my diaries and journals of 36 years. On the surface, that's like, well, so what? You know what I mean? So you want to share that with the world? How's that going to translate? What I found out, and I didn't know, you know, if I was going to find in those journals something that was worthy of sharing. I do remember this. I remember writing this down on day four when I was writing. I said, the words on these pages need to be worthy if signed by anonymous, but at the same time, be a book that only I could have written. And that's what I try to pull off. So what I mean by that, I can tell you a personal story, but is that relatable? Can you see yourself in it? Do you have did your life story open up with a story with your mom brandishing a 12-inch knife on your dad and your dad with a ketchup bottle? Probably not. But did you have times and things you may have seen as a kid that shaped who you were or hardships in your own life at times where you're like, wow, I would have wished that hardship on anybody, but it had a green light asset that it revealed to me later in life, a lesson that I learned that helped me move and get on my way and on my path. So what I did find that surprised me is the more personal I got, the more relatable actually that the stories became, which happens, you know, it surprised me, but then I look back at acting, my best roles are when I go the most personal. And my roles that have translated to more people that they go, I saw myself in that, were the roles that were the most personal to me. And that's so in that way, the book is about the human condition. You may not have the same examples and circumstances, experiences exactly that I had, but we've all had similar times in our life when we were lost or needed to find our frequency and could not, but then later did. And it's all science in the rearview mirror. It all adds up in the rearview mirror. Going forward, it's all a mystery. But looking back, you can kind of connect the dots and see how we got to where we are.
The title is Green Lights. Explain to the audience what that means to you.
So green lights, all right? We love green lights. They say go. We can keep our foot on the pedal, man. They affirm our way. They say yes, they are freedom. We do not like yellow and red lights. They slow us down and they stop us in our tracks. We don't want red and yellow lights, but often, most of the times I've found that red and yellow lights can sometimes give us what we need. Maybe we don't want it, but they can give us what we need and help us grow. There are green lights that we can create in our lives with our own choices, meaning like we can make choices today that tee us up for success tomorrow, that bring us less stress tomorrow. All the way down to the simplest things. I'm talking about put your coffee in your coffee filter tonight before you go to bed. So tomorrow morning, all you got to do is press the button. That's a green light. You've teed yourself up for ease. You were kind to your future self. But they also come in choices that we make with our relationships, our responsibilities to our relationships, our accountability for our relationships and ourselves. They can reveal choices we can make in our careers as well that tee us up for more success and more things that turn us on personally in our future. We are responsible for those. Other times, green lights just fall in our laps and we get damn lucky. I don't know where they came from. I got lucky. What am I going to do with it? Sometimes, as I was mentioning in the beginning, a green light is just how we see a certain situation at that time. It's about perspective. We can be in a hardship and notice when we're in it. Ooh, there's a green light lesson I'm supposed to learn here. This sucks, but it's going to be good in the long run. Sometimes we don't notice till tomorrow. Sometimes we don't notice till next week. Sometimes we're probably not going to notice what those green lights were in those red and yellow lights until we're on our deathbed. But eventually, the red and yellow lights in our lives, I do believe, do reveal green light assets or actually turn green themselves.
One of the more interesting stories in the book was how you describe the process of picking Texas as your college. So certainly everyone on this call, certainly everybody listening to the show knows Matthew McConaughey, native son of Texas, proud Longhorn. You actually wanted to go to SMU.
Yeah.
How did that go down?
So I'm in Australia as an exchange student. I want to be a lawyer. I figure SMU's in Dallas. It's a major metropolis. I've always been a big fan of experiential learning. So in my mind at that time, I'm like, look, as a metropolis, I'll be able to get an internship in a law school in Dallas sooner than I would in Austin. Therefore, I could be in practice as a lawyer probably sooner with more options and places to do so. My dad, who was going to pay for school, calls me one time in Australia right before I'm about to come home. And I've just started applying to colleges. And he says, he always called the school by their mascot. He's like, so you want to be a Mustang, huh? I was like, yes, sir. And I told him those reasons why. And he goes, well, what about being a Longhorn, buddy? And I was like, no, I want to be a Mustang. And here's those reasons why. And he's like, you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. We hang up. I have no idea why my dad's saying, want to be a Longhorn. The phone rings 5 minutes later. It's my brother, Pat, middle brother. He goes, hey, man, little brother, dad ain't going to tell you this, but financial times are tough. The oil business has gone in the tank. He's kind of broke, and it's going to cost him 3 times as much to send you to SMU than it will UT. You should go to Texas. And I was like, I don't know about that, you know? And he goes, man, have you ever been to Austin? And I said, no. He goes, your shirtless, no shoes wearing ass is going to love it, man. You can walk in Austin and saddle up at a bar. You're going to have a cowboy to the right of you, a Texas Ranger to the right of you, and a lesbian to your left, and a dwarf on the other side of them, and somebody else on the other side. It's your kind of place. All you got to be is you in Austin. And I was like, oh, that sounds good. Well, he was right. I called my dad right after that, knowing that it would financially help him, and said, I want to be a Longhorn. He's like, oh, great idea, buddy. Hook 'em horns, man. And that's why I went. And look, if I didn't go to University of Texas, I probably wouldn't be sitting there talking to you with the life I have right now.
It's true. And one of the things that obviously came of that, especially coming from Texas, you've written about how football has been meaningful to you basically your entire life, from your dad's playing career to obviously going to UT. What is it about college, though, that has resonated with you more so than the pros, more than high school, more than any other level? What is it about the college football level that is in your DNA?
Well, the purity. And look, am I being somewhat romantic? It's getting to be more and more of a romantic notion with each day as college sports become their own business. But that fact of you got 4 years on average at one place to play school. There's not a free agency. You're not going to, you know, now you got more transfers than you used to. But still, overall, it's not like, you know, in the pros now, you can love your team this year and it may be a completely different team next year.
Right.
You still may love the team, but your players may be completely different. In college, you've got that they're, you know, that they're essentially not getting paid like they do in pro sports. They're still 18 to 22 years old. Most of them in a place like University of Texas were the absolute stud in their high school. They really find out how much of a stud they are on an overall level. Obviously most of them do not go pro. A lot more of them think they're going to go pro than they actually do. Obviously. It's the ritual around it. It's the school spirit behind it. It's where the mascot still really means something, or at least I sure like to believe that it really means something. It's an expectation, and it's time when young men are growing into becoming men. It is teamwork. At the same time, it's individual responsibility. That's what I love about the sport of football. It's battle. At the University of Texas, one of my favorite things, and this is under debate now, of should the eyes of Texas still remain. But one of the things I love about the song is that we play it and stand for it after wins and losses, which is basically after a loss is saying we may have lost the battle, but we're still going to win the war. When it's an ongoing thing, you're playing for alma mater that was there before you. You're playing for young athletes that are going to come after you. And it is, It's my favorite. It's my favorite sport in the world. College football is my favorite sport that I like to follow. And I've just, you know, you see these young men are more impressionable. It's so much about, I say this all the time. If someone can figure out the key to unlock the mind of the 18 to 22 year old young male athlete, there's more than gold in there. I mean, there, because so much of it is about confidence. So much of it is about where are they mentally. You see teams go out there that, you know, do not have the physical capacity to even wear the jock strap of the team they're playing. But if they're mentally on it, they can beat that team on that Saturday. You know, I've been able to see games like the 2005 National Championship when we beat USC. You couldn't write that script in Hollywood. You couldn't write that script. That's the best drama, one of the best dramas I've ever seen, and it was live. So that's some of the stuff I love about it.
What would it have taken for you? You were not a college football recruit when you were talking about SMU versus Texas.
Yeah.
If you were a college football recruit, what is in the 17 or 18-year-old Matthew McConaughey's mind that would have unlocked him to get him to Texas, USC, Cal, Florida State? What would have swayed you at that moment?
Well, one, I think my legs would need to be about 2 inches longer.
hypothetical that you are a five-star blue chip recruit.
What would have gotten me to go play? Well, you know, my dad played at University of Kentucky under Bear Bryant. He had a falling out with him, transferred to Houston, and then got drafted by the Green Bay Packers. Let me tell you this story about football. He came to us, and we were, you know, I grew up in Texas. My brothers and I all played football up to a certain level. I remember being very nervous, and this story is not in the book, but I remember being very nervous about telling him I didn't want to play football in high school. And I called him back from my room to tell him, and I was nervous, and I told him, and he goes, "Oh, great, great idea, buddy." And I told him I wanted to play golf. And he goes, "Great, play golf. You can play that till you go down." I go, "Dad, why are you so amenable to this idea?" He goes, "You know how, can you tell it's me coming to your room before I get there?" And I go, "Yeah, yes, sir." And he goes, "How can you tell?" I said, "I can hear you." He goes, "What do you hear?" I go, "I hear bop, bop, bop." And he goes, "Yeah, man, I got a plate in here. I got screws in here." He goes, "Play golf. You'll play it till you go down." I would have been a good linebacker. That's my mentality. Meaning that spot on defense that has to do with speed and power and really putting your nose in it and reading an offense in the middle of the field is where I would have, where I mentally excel. Meaning when I played baseball, I was an all-star catcher. When I played soccer, I was an all-star goalie. I love defense. And that place in linebacker was where I thought my body was going to go to give me the ability to play. And then I got kind of, my growth kind of got stumped around the eighth, ninth grade. And where I was bigger before, now I wasn't bigger, but I also didn't have the speed. So I would have played linebacker. One of my favorite football players growing up was a guy named Hall of Famer named Chris Hamburger for what is now called the Washington football team. And his deal was he could hit you at the line of scrimmage, have you completely wrapped up. He may give you 2 extra yards past that, but he loved to grab you and throw you down and then stand over you and go, "Look, see, I didn't go down the ground with you." And he may give you 2 extra yards on that. But I have a linebacker's mentality. And I've carried that linebacker's mentality throughout my life, and it's helped me in my own career.
You have a couple roles at the University of Texas. Obviously, the Minister of Culture thing has been well written about, and it's well known at this point. Also, you teach a class at UT.
Yep.
And your class is your background. It's film studies. It's, you know, from the screen to the studio, all sorts of things that you have decades of experience in.
Yeah.
You didn't have experience in college sports. This is a foreign industry to you. Where does the confidence come from within you to go to UT and say, "I have ideas, I have thoughts,
yeah,
I am committed"? Where does that confidence come from?
Well, the same values, and this is part of my work as Minister of Culture, trying to align the same values that, look, the same values it takes to have a championship team on the field or in the pool or on the pitch or on the course are the same values for championships. There are the same values that it takes for students who are not athletes to go and succeed and do the best they can and succeed in business. So So I'm wanting to align those values. And how do we maintain and make sure we are still becoming even more so a university that's not only putting champions out on the field in a sport, but also putting champions out into life as civilians in the workplace, as individuals.
Right.
So, you know, I'm now 50. You know, the class that I teach, it was a very, I remember the time I was sitting there, I would always go talk to the students in film classes long before the class got started. And they started to be like really, really interested in what I was saying and would like take notes and tell me that was so awesome, that was sure. that knowledge you dropped on us. And I was like, in my mind, really? I just took that for granted. I thought everyone knew that. And I always felt like I was just here in college like 4 years ago. Well, no, it's been a little bit longer than that. So I realized, oh, I've put together a career and gained experience that is worth sharing. And actually, then I got the confidence to say, well, let's create a class, because I may take it for granted, but I have a lot of experience that these students, these serious film students, do not have. And then I thought about, what is the class I would have wanted? What is the class I wish they would have had for me when I was at film school? And it was this: how does an original script get to screen? Many, many changes and adaptations along the way. So in our class, we chronologically follow the journey a script takes to get to screen.
Right.
And we show you the science behind the magic of movie making and storytelling.
And the college sports element, where do you get the confidence to say, I have ideas that college athletes need to hear?
Well, for instance, you know, I don't know how to go, you know, run better. I don't know how to go better run a college offense. I don't know how to, I don't go to Tom Herman or Mac Brown and say, I got ideas for a play.
Sure. Maybe you should.
What I like to share is things that I know. I've always been intrigued with the intangibles. You know, there's two, like, for instance, the Utah game where we waxed Utah last year. The two plays that I show the team that I want to talk to coaches about are, one, when Keandre Coburn gets his helmet knocked off his head in the middle of the field and still runs after the guy with the ball and gets in on the tackle. And then is on the sideline where you can see his mouth after he's kicked out of the game, because you have to take a playoff, right? Because you can't be on the field without, you can't pursue a play without your helmet on. And you see his mouth going, I didn't know that was a beeping rule. I'm like, that is a great intangible. That yes. mental capacity right there, that you were balling without a helmet, is an intangible that can speak volumes across a board for a team. Another one is this: Sam Ellinger breaks out to the left, goes on like a 32-yard run. We're well ahead. He's coming back on the field. The cornerback that finally got him out of bounds is up in his face. Three linemen ran the 32 yards down the field and just built a wall up in front of that cornerback and backed him off of their quarterback. And Sam Ellinger didn't even look at the cornerback, just ran back to the huddle. But his three linemen were down the field in that cornerback's face going, no, you don't touch, you don't talk any smack to our quarterback. We're rolling your ass right now. Those are two intangibles that don't have anything to do with a specific play, but they have to do with they majorly have to do with a mentality that is can help you succeed on a football field.
And by the way, there's a lot of parallel there between what you saw on that play and some of the passages in your book, your Absolutely. Experiences with your father, about getting into his good graces. Yep. There were several interesting stories about that in the book, how you sort of, I guess, got on the good side, if you want to say, for your
right
with your father.
Initiations.
Yeah.
You know, my dad's, you know, if I ask my dad, what was your biggest asset as a football player when you were your best? He goes, play to the whistle blows. And sometimes a little bit further, even longer. So I've had many things in my life where maybe I didn't have the equal ability as the person next to me I was competing with, but I got the job or succeeded because I out-hustled that person. I got back up again. I got up from more failures than that person did. And that person finally went, I give, man. I can't beat this guy. He just won't quit coming. And so that underdog mentality is something that I've taken into my work throughout my life. You know, our family, we had big rites of passage, and some of them were physical. Quite a few of them were. And that was a rite of passage in my dad's mind of when you become a man. Part of it was to challenge him. If you got the cojones to challenge me, he'd always say, boys, you know where to find me. Now, that was a big challenge. My dad was a big man. you know, 6'4", 265. Those numbers didn't bode well for actually. But if you went to him, which my brother did, and I did in some fashion a little bit later in life, it wasn't about, you didn't ever get in the real fight. It was that if you actually met the challenge, like, come on, old man, let's do it. That's when he went, ah, there's my boy. That's what I was looking for. Then you were buddies with him. But you needed to come in and mean it and say, I'm going my own way. I'm not taking it anymore. Here's what I'm going to do. And that's when you got the bear hug and the tears from him saying, that's my boy.
So I want to go back to the intangibles for a second, because this is also something that you talk about in the book with regard to sports betting. You're not necessarily, first off, you're not betting for the money. It's not about the money.
No.
It's about saying, I told you so, right?
It's
That's what it's
saying,
about for
I
you.
I knew it. It's about saying, I knew it. It's about buying a ticket to the game that I'm not that interested in, so I'm going to lay $50 on the pro game. It's about, you know, when I say, oh, I'm betting on whoever, I'm betting on Brett Favre's team Monday night because his dad passed away last Tuesday. And if he's going to actually play in this game, which he says he is, those intent, he will be playing for more than just the game.
Oh.
He's going to be on another level. And he actually was, you know what I mean?
I told you so, right? There you go.
Yeah, I knew it. It's an intangible, you know, the pick of just the straight spread is not that interesting to me. It's how was that team in practice? Who traveled across the country is going to be jet lagged. And I'm not always right. I'd say I'm 51% right. And if you're 51% right, you could actually make a bit of a living doing
profit.
It. But
yeah.
When you know how it is, when you're wrong, you're like, well, there must be a glitch in the system. You know what I mean? But when you're right, you're like, I knew I was on the pulse. And whether that's fooling myself or not, I don't care. It's fun to go, I knew it. I knew it. I read the future.
Well, so with all that being said, we're a college football show. 18 to 22-year-old athletes, a crazy time in all of their lives, raging hormones, wild emotions, insane rivalries. I would think if intangibles are your thing as a bettor, that college football might be something you're interested in. Do you bet at all on college football?
Not really. And I don't with my teams. Kind of keep that out of it. I don't want to. I've got a relationship with players and coaches at the University of Texas. I do have an inside eye. I want to keep that pure
sure.
as I can with yeah. them. Yeah, you know, right now, what's this season going to end up being? I mean, what do we got? We got Ohio, Big Ten comes out last week, plays their first games. You're looking at these lopsided numbers when you're seeing teams play. Texas 2-2 playing Baylor 1-1. Wait, what? Where were the mm-hmm, other two games? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think Wisconsin just canceled another game here. We're going to find out if this grand experiment's going to work here that we're in. You know, right now, the team, this is more of a mental game, this mental season, this season, than any season. It's an abbreviated season. The kids' routines are not the same. The coaches have not had the same access or time to spend with the teams. I would think it's probably a good time to simplify some awesome game plans and say, let your athletes take full advantage of their athletic ability as you can. Because the kids haven't had the time to go through the reps that they would have had time before. And again, the hard thing in a season, it's impossible to get those young men on a college football field to be absolutely in peak performance position, and they're mentally and physically 10 Saturdays a year. Now on paper you go, it's 10 Saturdays a year for 3.5 hours. Can we everything go to having people? It doesn't happen. I remember, Coach Mac Brown used to say, at Texas when he was there, we'll play good against Oklahoma or Nebraska in your background, which there's a story of when we beat Nebraska in 99 in the book. But he would say, and at that time Rice wasn't very good. And he was like, but we're going to need you to pump up the team for the Rice game because I have a tendency to play just good enough and maybe make it closer than it should have been. You know, and that's one of Texas's challenges right now is and it has been, it's not only is being good enough to roll the teams you should roll and put the proverbial foot down on the throat when it's time. And because we play some of the big games good. Our best game we probably played last year was against LSU. We lost, but we play good in those big games. It's about finding a consistency across the board for us right now of going out there and playing for a par excellence that we ourselves hold ourselves accountable to, not what anyone else thinks.
Matthew, what's your relationship with the age-old question now of, is Texas back? Is it annoying to hear that? I'm sure you've heard it by now. Is it annoying to hear that? Is it something that you hear and you sort of chuckle about it? How do you feel about that? What does Texas back even really mean to a Texas alum and a longtime Texas fan?
Well, Texas back means earnestly competing for national championships, period. That's the expectation. Players understand that when they come to Texas, that needs to be that par excellence sort of measure above the head and in the mind of anybody at University of Texas playing any sport. We are, you know, we have a tradition. We're right there in the hotbed of incredible athletes. We have, no one has better facilities. No one has a better opportunity to be great, be any better than we do here at the University of Texas. So are we back? No, we're not back. And I believe when we quit even fighting to say, we got to get back because the world thinks we should be back. And we're just like, F it. We're back. We're going to go do the work and we're going to handle it. I think, you know, at a place like Texas, you're going to be scrutinized at a different level than anywhere else. Well, that's part of the package. So in that way, these young men have to grow up even faster. And in today's world of social media, how do you keep from playing in the damn third person? You know what I mean? When we start playing as a team in the first person, as the subject, forget the Jumbotron, forget what anyone's saying about me Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, leading up. Say, we first start forgetting about that and playing for ourselves as a team and quit worrying about what the rest of the world thinks, that's when we'll actually be on our way to truly being back.
Does Texas have to worry about the Texas machine becoming too big? Because as you know, I mean, it's similar to a movie set in that there are so many people that go into a major football program. What is, and I don't mean this in a good nor a bad way, what does that machine look like behind the scenes? What does it mean to have to, you know, there are so many voices, there are boosters, there are athletic directors, there are so many voices that have opinions about what Texas football should be doing. What does it take to wrangle that machine from what you've seen?
Wins. That's a W. That's not a three. That's a W. Wins. Winning fixes most all of it. And that's not just at the University of Texas, but it's definitely at the University of Texas. You know, Tom Herman, coach, came in there and talked about the football team. His main word, which is a good one, is alignment. We got to get everyone's expectations aligned and understand what it takes to play there. And then you go about the course and you stick to it. It's something you can believe in and that you're going to take even into next Saturday, even after maybe a loss. Getting everyone aligned. Again, the expectations are higher, as high and higher than anywhere else in any other university in the nation. Good. Can you look at that as not pressure? Here, let me give you an example. I did a film called Killer Joe. The director, William Friedkin, did something that I've never heard before. And it was awesome. But this is what the mentality needs to be at Texas right here. He goes, okay, everyone, new rule. This entire shoot. It's day one we're shooting. He goes, everybody gets one take. Now you can go two ways with that. You can go, oh, shit. What am I going to do? Or you can go, well, F it. Let's rock and roll. Don't hold anything back. You got one take. It's live. There's no take two. There's no audition. Let's go. I was happy to engage in that second version where I found it freeing. I found freedom in it instead of getting tight with the pressure. We'll get some consistency as we're getting into now that will hopefully deem and prove itself to be successful in the long run. This is a tricky, wild year. This was Tom Herman's fourth year. These are his guys. This is the year I had penciled in that I thought we would really compete for the national championship. It doesn't look like that's going to happen at our record at 3-2. I feel like we'll go in and play Oklahoma State good, because that's a big game. It's a conference game. The other thing you got to remember, Texas, is take pride and honor in the fact that you are 11 other teams' favorite and biggest rival.
True.
And the next one, I think, is 4 at Notre Dame. And we're like, we have 11. Look at that with honor and look at that with responsibility and accountability and go, good, I'd have it no other way. You know, it's like I say to Oklahoma, they are indirectly complimenting us every time they do this with their horns. It's like they've grabbed our sign and all they do is turn it upside down. It's like, well, thank you. Do you have your own sign? In the meantime, keep doing that because it's a compliment. It means your identity goes through us.
One of the things that you've talked about, even as it relates to your acting career, is over-preparing, just knowing everything about a role. And in your current role as Minister of Culture, you're in the weeds. You're with players. You're with coaches. Coaches travel and see how other programs operate. Have you been to Ohio State, Alabama, Florida, Oregon? Have you been to those places to familiarize yourself with what major college football looks like?
I've been to pro sports, I've been to international sports, and I've gone around the world and seen how different organizations, businesses, and sports and institutions handle themselves. One of the things that you have to do, and this goes back to alignment, you have to have clear messaging. I have been at Texas at times in the past where the messages were beautiful, but there are too many of them. You got to have a baseline. You got to have a bloodline message, a commitment to excellence, or a play like a champion, or what is the baseline theme that bleeds through 24/7 from practice to the locker rooms to game day and reverberates throughout the entire stadium? What is the heartbeat that you can go, this is who we are, this is what we rely on? Now, you can have a different motto each week to get people up with a new aspirational thought. You can have a motto each season that you can amend a little bit, but the heartbeat has to stay and continue to be consistent throughout. And the greatest teams have that and rely on that. And it is the thing that takes you through the losses that you will have, takes you through the battles, because it's the theme that takes you on to go win the war at the end of the battles.
Is that cohesion close? Is it there? What sense do you get from seeing successful organizations to where Texas is in late October?
Well, it's hard to say right now at 3-2 that it's there, because it wouldn't be apparent that it is. It wouldn't be apparent that it is there, because at the end of the day, we can talk about it all we want. And myself being a huge University of Texas Longhorn fan, and people that don't like the University of Texas, our biggest rivals, would say, your record tells you who you are. That's the old Bill Parcells thing. Your record tells you where you are. Right. So other than that, it's talk. And when talk leads to actual belief. I want to go to another thing you mentioned here, though.
Sure.
It has to do with my work in preparation. If you look at schools that get a new defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, that first year, that team on that side of the ball is probably not going to be that good. Because you're going to see him on the field thinking. You're going to see him trying to measure. And if a player thinks while they're on the field, they're usually a half step late, especially on defense. You're usually a half step late if you think, oh, this is the transition from the linebacker to me as the safety. If you prepare long enough and you go through the reps and it gets out of your mind and into your loins and instinct and gut, then you're reacting. Then the great athlete can react within the structure of what they've learned. But you don't want a great athlete, or me, in my job, what I do as an actor. I do all the preparation. My hard work is preseason, pre-production. When I go to set and it's game time, one take or 20 takes, whatever, I'm playing. I'm enjoying the playfulness of it. I come in loaded, man. I got 4 versions of the truth that I'm going to give you, and you can throw anything at me. I'll call an audible in sync. Don't even yell cut. Let's go. Throw it at me. I love that's the, you know, I want to be off balance and find my way to getting balanced in a scene. That's the same thing with an athlete. You don't want athletes out there overthinking stuff. At the same time, you got a plan, and that's what the preseason's about, or before the season. You want to have enough reps to follow through with that plan by the time you were playing on Saturdays, you're not having to think about it. it's instinctually there.
I want to go back to that theme of preparation, though, having a plan. There's one story in particular where you talk about your early acting career, how you figured out the character, and there was a 4-page monologue that you didn't know was a 4-page monologue or that it was in Spanish, but you were prepared, you were loaded for bear to go into this scene, and it was one of those moments early on where you were a little too cavalier. I got the biggest kick out of that story.
It's one of the, there's quite a few stories in here where I step in S-H-I-T, and this is one of them. I get this bright idea that I don't need to study the script. I don't need to break down the scene. If I know my man and I know the circumstance, I'll just go there, press record on the camera, let the camera roll, and I'll be my man and do and say what he would do. Well, that's a great idea until right before the take, you look at the script, which I did, notice a 4-page monologue in Spanish. And I remember the sheer embarrassment and the bead of sweat that came up on the back of my head and dripped down my neck. And I was like, oh, shit. And I said to no one in particular, give me 12 minutes, please. Thinking that would be not enough time to inconvenience the crew, but also enough time to learn a 4-page monologue in Spanish because, hey, I took Spanish in my one semester in 11th grade.
That's all you need, right?
Yeah. Hey, all you need. Negatory. So it was not enough to learn that. And I remember I went and did the scene. I didn't let anyone know that I wasn't prepared. I think it was probably obvious. But from that day on, I said, no, you have to work. You have to prepare. You have to form the structure to then have the freedom to play and do your job well. Preparation has been incredibly important for me since that date. And I learned a lesson the hard way because I had a bright idea that was not a prudent one.
So hold on. What did you do, though? Were you able to learn some bulk of it in Spanish? How did you carry on the scene?
Too embarrassed to watch it. I've never watched it. I don't remember what I did. I'm sure it was some half-assed horrible version of Yo Porque Yo Lo Valgo. I'm sure it didn't sound like I knew Spanish really well.
Well, yeah, I guess to that point, you know, back to the book for a second, you do describe the process that you seemingly follow to figure out your characters before that pre-production, that pre-game stage of creating any kind of motion picture. The first step seemingly is you get the script. Once you get the script, you kind of craft the persona around your character. And then at some point you step into the character. And at that point, like, I don't want to say the script goes out the window. Obviously it does not. But at that point, when you kind of merge with the character, that's when you take some of those creative liberties that really make you
absolutely
as good as you are.
All informed by starting with what the script gave me. So you start with what is on the page first. What do you need to learn? Do that before you go towards the imagination or think about improvising or calling audibles. Know the playbook so well that you're confident to call the audible when you're in the game. I call it owning my man. The writer may write it, the director may be directing it, but I need to get to a point where I own that character. I'm the boss of that character. And a good director wants his actors to go take ownership. You're the bloodline. Take it and run. Mac Brown wants Vince Young to come over to the sideline and go, give me the ball. I got this. That's the play, but I'm calling an audible at the line because I see something. You want a player to take that ownership. But if it's based off of what is the general plan, what's the structure, if it's within a good improviser, only improvise all the things I'll improvise or make up when I'm doing it well, is based off of the structure and the context of the plan on the page and who the man is on the page. I'm not just making stuff up. It's all coming out of the inventory of the study and that I've already done. And not just so you can see people improvise in scenes and it may seem like, oh, that was really clever and good. But sometimes you go, but that really isn't what the character would do. Oh, that was a kind of one-off scene. You see it in comedies a lot. There are some great improvisers. Some of them do it really well and they improvise within the context of who their character is and the relationship with whoever they're in the scene with. sometimes you'll see comedians go off and improvise a scene. You're like, oh, they've had that skit written and they were just looking for a place to put it in a movie. Mm-hmm. And they just ripped it off and did it. And while it may be funny in the moment, you may go after the movie, it really wasn't true to the guy or true to the relationship that the person had in the movie. So it needs to be with all improvisation, all audibles need to be within the context of the original plan.
So with that said, being so this is a show that airs on a Friday, and on Fridays here on the Solid Verbal, we do a weird space-themed college football show. You were in a movie called Interstellar, where you played astronaut, a galactic traveler. How on God's green earth did you plan for your role as a galactic traveler? Because there aren't a whole lot of real-world reference points that you can go off there.
Yeah, right? I mean, one, I went to Chris Nolan a lot, who he creates these conceptual worlds. So I went to him like, and I said, like, what's the, give me the rules here. How does time move here? What, where are we? What's gravity like, et cetera. I'm the lead astronaut. I need to know this for the survival and the success of our mission. He didn't always have the answers. Sometimes he goes, that's a good question. I'm not quite sure what the rules are. And he'd come back to me though, a week later and go, you know, I thought about what you asked me. And we'd go over it and kind of hash it out to where I could have some sound information, understand the rules of engagement with the world he created. You know, that was different than, say, like my role in Contact, where I played a believer in the world of science. And coming away from that movie, it was like, oh, you know what? As a believer, God's backyard's bigger than I thought it was. And it opened my eyes to think of more places than just Earth as the backyard that we're all living in. Interstellar was more, you know, in some ways, more personal in that the questions of like, what would you do if you went in time, ran at a different pace and your kids had grown up and you missed their childhood because you're in a different time lapse and time frame of the universe. Is that worth sacrificing? And what are the consequences of that? So other than that, I was able to get very personal with Cooper and then try to just understand what the hell is the rules in this Tesseract? What does it mean? No. What does it mean when I were on Saturn here? How does time move differently? So I can understand what the decisions are going to cost me as the character.
One of the things we hate, and this does tie back, trust me, one of the things we hate as college football fans is watching coaches get comfortable, watching coaches stay stubborn, watching coaches do what sort of they believe to be, well, this is what people expect of me. It was fascinating to hear you've talked about romantic comedies and how you felt pigeonholed. You felt that this is how you were going to be viewed. This is how you felt. Everybody said, well, this is what he does. And you just stopped doing those. And you never would have ended up in a movie like Interstellar. You never would have ended up in Dallas Buyers Club, any of these movies that are incredibly well regarded. What did was that a difficult thing because of obviously financial ramifications? And you had made it. You were a movie star. What did it take for you to fully sprint out of your comfort zone?
Yeah. Well, first of all, hell yeah, it was difficult. One of the most difficult decisions I've ever made in my life. I was at a time in my career where I was the go-to guy for rom-coms and they paid me handsomely and I was shirtless on the beach. You damn right. Those rom-coms paid the rent for the houses on the beaches where I ran shirtless. Guilty. Yes, sir. That was me by choice. So, you know, it's also not fair to say, oh, that was you, but now the real you comes up. No, that was me as well. And what I've been doing is also me. But the things that I've been doing over the last 12 years, these dramas you bring up, those are not getting offered me at that time. So while I was fully happy and straight-faced about the life I was living in rom-coms and loved my job and stuff, they had pigeonholed me to where that's the only thing I was getting offered. So I decided if I can't do what I want to do, I'm going to stop doing what I've been doing. And I talk about this in the book, process of elimination. If we can't do what we want to do, or we don't know what we want to do or who we are, eliminate the things we're not. And by process of elimination, we'll end up with the things that feed us and tell us who we are in front of us. Well, I checked my money manager. I said, I'm going to stop doing rom-coms. I don't know how long I'll go without work. How have I saved my money? He said, you saved your money. Well, you can afford it. I check with my wife. I check with my agent. I shed many a tear on my wife's shoulder going, I may not work. I don't know for how long. I don't know how long I'll be in a drought. Well, it was a 20-month drought. No work. Nothing came in. I was forgotten by Hollywood. But at the same time, I wasn't in the theater or in your living room in a rom-com. You didn't see me on the beach shirtless anymore. So after 20 months of no work, I became a new, fresh novel. Good idea for those dramatic roles that I was looking for. And boy, as soon as they came my way, I ferociously attacked them. So I unbranded to rebrand. You know, sometimes if we don't, not sure what the new game plan is,
right,
stop doing the old one and press reset. You know what I mean? Remove yourself from old habits, and then you will hopefully, you know, the ones that the new habits you want to partake in will reveal themselves. And sometimes that's by just being away and out of the picture. And that's what it was for me at that time.
And now you're away and in Austin. You're not in Malibu. You're not in LA. You're not in Hollywood. You're in Austin. And to bring it full circle, because we talked about you as a hypothetical recruit. We talked about UT. I'm not going to say this in the context of a recruit, but let's say I, Dan Rubenstein, am coming to Austin for UT Oklahoma State, UT TCU, whatever. If you are mapping out the perfect Austin college football weekend, what is your itinerary? What are we doing? What are we eating? Where are we hiking?
Well, the perfect weekend is, look, I've got, you know, a box there where my family goes. I prefer the sidelines. I like to see it at eye level and see those young men, look them in the eye and be down there where I can break a sweat as well with them. The tailgate, it's going to matter what time the game starts Saturday. Hopefully it's later afternoon so we can go ahead and revel in on Friday night and get loosened up.
Where are we going?
For tomorrow's game.
What are we doing Friday night?
Well, we're going to probably hang at my house, and I'm going to be cooking inch and 5/8 ribeyes.
I'm here.
Rub right there. And there's going to be some music playing, and we're going to be getting ready. We're going to enjoy the night and talk about things. And then tomorrow morning is game time early at my house.
Okay.
We're getting in the zone pretty early and to get focused and hope that our focus is reverberating all the way through the city. And that the whole city's focus is reverberating to the team, to where today when we go to the game, this is the place to be on the planet. And we got to be there. And we are, you know, A&M's got the name 12th man, but how can we be the 12th man? I've seen crowds actually help will teams. We talked earlier about the mind of the 18 to 22 year old. Sometimes the fatigue keeps it from being a self-starter in that fourth quarter to dig in and find that extra. A lot of times a crowd can help that. I'm amazed at how much players let you know how much a crowd has helped them out at certain times. So we get there. The only game in town, the only game in the planet is right there. The only color in our stadium is going to be burnt orange. If we get out of there early, we've got a few good places to go tailgate for sure, to get some meal on us. And before we get to the game, you probably be in the box. I may go down. I'll kiss everybody goodbye. I'm going down to the sideline. We'll see you after the game. Hopefully it's a victory. Well, after we sing Eyes of Texas, and we'll move on and victory. We'll now go continue to celebrate our victory afterwards.
Where's that? Is that your house? Is that town?
We'll
is that
go where we're going? After that, after a long day of football combined with the night before, I usually go for something a little little lighter. There's a place we'll go by Uchi or Uchiko, and we're going to have a nice sushi dinner because we've loaded up on our heavy duty carbs all day long and last night as well. So we'll go have a sushi dinner then. If we've got a good gig in town, live music, we're going to go check that out. And guess what? I've got a driver. He's going to take us in a bus. Everyone drink up. You don't have to drive. We're going to go do that and get everyone back. And then Sunday we'll, ease in and, ease into the day, sleep in, don't worry about it. We'll actually slip by the 11 o'clock church service at our church, which is just a mile down the road.
Great.
Go atone for our sins if we got them, which I'm sure we did, and, get ready for the week and get ready to do it all over again.
I'll awesome. Send you my confirmation number. The breakfast tacos are on me. I'm ready.
Heard.
All right. Again, his name is Matthew McConaughey. His memoir, Green Lights, it is available now. We're going to link it up in our show notes. Go out, buy it. He's holding it up. It's a great read. Like I said, I practically read it, Matthew, in one sitting. It's a really, really good book.
Fantastic.
Well done. This has been a true pleasure. We wish you nothing but the best with the book and with all your endeavors. And stop by anytime you want.
I dig it. Appreciate it, man.
Take care.
All right, now.
Okay, Daniel, there you go.
Wow. I'm inspired, Ty.
I am, I mean, too.
I've been reading the book. Whew. It's great.
That is a bucket list interview for us. I am super pumped that we were finally able to pull that off. We thank Mr. McConaughey for being so gracious with his time, and would again urge everybody to go on out there and check out Green Lights, the book. We got the link in the show notes. Really a collection of deeply personal stories about Matthew's life, how he got to where he is today, and just an eclectic mix of life experiences that I think you can certainly find inspiration in.
While I'm still opted out of emotionally investing myself into Texas football.
You picked a really weird time to opt out, knowing that this interview is on the horizon.
I'm more emotionally invested than I ever was in Matthew McConaughey's career and life.
True.
So that's where I'm taking that investment. And also, I will celebrate like it's the birth of my own child if Texas were not only to win a national championship, but we get, you remember what J.R. Smith did after Cleveland won? Finally, the LeBron. Remember he goes shirtless in a parade?
Yeah.
Feels like that's on the horizon. If Texas is able to mount that full comeback, Matthew McConaughey is going to be a joy in however he celebrates.
However he celebrates. I think that's apparent in our interview this evening. So,
have you seen Magic Mike, by the way?
It's a good movie.
Magic Mike is really good.
It's a good movie.
Really good movie.
I watched it with my mom, which was that was different. That was not, not
there's
quite the
experience.
There's a
pretty early sex scene.
Yeah.
With Olivia Munn. Is that who it was?
It was definitely not the movie watching experience that I was looking to get, but it was a good movie. I liked the movie. The movie was really good.
I would like to know what Mama H's reaction was in watching that movie. Obviously, you cannot tell me because it's so specific, but what her reaction was when McConaughey gets on stage near the beginning of the movie in those leather chaps tie and says, the law says there's no touching. But I see a lot of lawbreakers out there. I'd like to see how Mama H reacted to that.
It was a different experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just making sure. I couldn't be happier with having Matthew McConaughey on the show. That was fantastic.
Give us an email at solidverbal@gmail.com. If you don't already, please do subscribe to the show at solidverbal.com. You can find all the listen links there in the upper right-hand corner. While you're there, please do sign up for the newsletter. We send it out every Friday, Daniel.
Right.
Just talk about what's going on in the college football world, what we're reading, in some cases, what we're eating. And last but certainly not least, as you are watching all of the action this weekend, give us a phone call at 408-VERBAL-1. That is 408-837-2251. And let us know, stream of consciousness, as you're watching the games, what's your reaction? What's your real-time feedback? We will mash those together into a segment we like to call the Reverbs. And we will play it for all y'all on our reaction show.
Can I ask you a question? This is just a guess from you. I wanted to ask McConaughey this, but we sort of ran out of time. He was already so generous with his time. He gave us about 45 minutes, right?
Yeah.
What are the chances to you? Because McConaughey is a dyed-in-the-wool, burnt orange, Texas diehard. What are the odds to you that he has a burner account on, I looked it up right now, Horns 24/7? Now, obviously, he can get all of the recruiting scoop he wants. He's friends and works alongside, you know, he's in the athletic department building with Tom Herman and Chris Del Conte. And he can text any of the players. He can text any of the staff, I'm sure he knew about the Quinn Ewers thing days ago.
But he just because he's a movie star doesn't mean that he's not on message boards.
To monitor the vibe.
It's got to be 50-50.
I would say there's a 72% chance he has a burner on either Horns 247 or some deeply secret Texas recruiting message board.
Oh, man.
I have to. Robert Gates with A&M?
I remember the Dennis Franchione newsletter.
There was definitely a Secretary of Defense
who had to out himself or was outed for a Texas A&M message board membership. I remember there was a potential judge a couple years ago, a nominated judge who did not, I believe, secure the nomination. And he was outed for his Alabama message board exploits. But I think 72%, 72 plus percent, McConaughey has a paywall recruiting burner account.
Right, I love in. That. Solidverbal at gmail.com. Subscribe to the show if you don't already. We will
I can
be
confirm
back.
That when I go to Austin for my magical college football weekend.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll be back in a few days to talk about all the college football action. Thank you so much for playing along with us, for downloading and supporting the show. Check us out on the live stream tomorrow. Go to verballers.com.
I cannot wait.
In the meantime, stay solid.
Ultra Megastar Friday Orbit. Peace.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.